Okay, well, thank you so much. It's so wonderful to be a part of the podcast, to even be invited to someone's platform. I'm the Right Honorable Yvonne Gamble, and I'm in the United States, in Atlanta, in the city of Atlanta, the state of Georgia, in the United States, North America. So that's where I am pinpointed.
Hello, and welcome to Obehi Podcast. I'm your host, Obehi Ewafo, and I strongly believe that everyone has a story to share. Now let's get started with this episode.
And just a little bit about me. I am a 35 plus year financial venture capitalist. And so I work in the area of venture capital, and that's what I pretty much have done all my life. I prayed my way into this position at 18 years old. I wanted to do that which touched a person's lives from the time they were born until the time they die. So my areas of expertise are in land, communications, and finance. So we'll delve into that more here on the show, and I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we're going to have time to look into that. But before we start on that, I will just tell you, even before we started recording just now, that we are actually focusing on African diaspora. So based on the peculiarity of the African diaspora, history for us is very important. So in that sense, when we have an individual in front of us, we try to go as far as we can to know who is this person, where are you coming from, because we are sort of trying to connect with one another and help us to, help us to have the feeling of who we are. So in this sense, I'm going to ask you to take us to when you were still a baby, still a child. Tell us what was happening around you. That is important for us.
I grew up in Michigan. My ancestries, they came here to this country from Morocco. And so that's where we're from. My father's family and then my mother's family, they're Native American, Cherokee, you know, here in on the continent. And so that's where we hailed from. Myself coming, you know, all the way. I was born in the state of Michigan here in the United States, and grew up on a 20-acre blueberry farm. So, you know, they were farmers, and my mother was also an accountant. So there, you know, that's pretty much the life I grew up in, and grew up into the family. Very intelligent, very highly artful people. My great-grandfather, he actually, on my mother's side, he actually invented, Andrew Jackson Beard, he invented the coupling device that's used on planes, trains, automobile, and machinery. And so he invented that, and he's in the Smithsonian Museum here in the United States, you know, honored for that. So this, so a scientific, you know, earthbound, you know, all those different things, you know, just love of the land, learning how to cultivate the land, how to, you know, make the land grow and make it your own. And basically, I can remember at 4 years old, you know, my standing by the big pot belly stove, my grandfather telling me that he had made the world for me, and that all I had to do was want, that anything in the world that I wanted would be mine and could be mine. And I've never lost sight of what he said. And no matter what any other people say and or do, I simply go back to his words as I'm looking up into his eyes.
That's so beautiful. That's so beautiful. That is what we should be telling our children, that they should see the limitation. This world belongs to them. They should be able to dream and aspire to become anything at all that they want. That is a package that your father have given you to to continue to unfold in the whole of your existence. That is so beautiful. I love that.
Well, I mean, that's just the way it happens. And, you know, I don't see the limit. I see life as limitless. I see the universe as boundless. So, you know, I do a lot in space technology. I serve on several different planetary, sovereign planetary society You know, and that society actually governs the way we write in governing policy, is how we actually act when we go off world, what we're supposed to do, how we're supposed to do it. Trust me, there will not be any flag planting or taking over when we get there, as we might think, because 9 times out of 10, there's going to be either someone else or other life, even if it's a life form that we're not aware of, but there will be other life forms that we have to be cognizant and respectful and mindful of. So I serve on that. I serve on the Mars, on that group. And we actually, you know, as they bring samples and bring things back and forth, you know, to Earth, you know, we actually determine, you know, what actually is going to come onto the planet and what is actually going to be tested at the space station. Because you can't just simply bring everything back here, because, you know, just the, we don't have the filtration systems that we are trying, that we are building and, you know, coming into place. So once we do, then we can bring every sample back directly to Earth.
Oh, that's very interesting. Now, in fact, that is an argument even of itself, the space scientific project. Anyway, we'll have time to also go there just now. So help me understand how you begin to form your identity now in terms of who you are going to be in this world, apart from what your father told you. So in your young adolescent growing up, what actually influenced you the more in choosing who you are going to represent?
Well, what really influenced me was what I didn't tell you was what my grandfather told me. Now, what my father did, he nicknamed me Sputnik. He nicknamed me Sputnik after the first satellite that had actually gone up into space. And with that, and he put, you know, telescopes and in my hand, you know, at an early age, and they taught me the stars and all the different constellations. This was before I went to school, before 5 years old, so that I could simply go out into the night sky or even the day sky and recognize, no matter where I was, whether I was in the Northern Hemisphere, the Southern Hemisphere, you know, we traveled a lot. And so that was extremely important to he and to my mother, that I understood, you know, the movement of the stars, that I understood the movement of the planets, what they were, how to recognize them. And so all those things began to shape and to develop what my life would be.
I wanted to spend some time on the space aspect. What did you do with that project that your father tried to get you involved in?
Well, what I actually did with that is, you know, I went to space camp. And there, and that was at the very beginnings of space camp that they had. The town that I grew up in, Covert, Michigan, we had a nuclear power plant in the town. And NASA was very heavily invested, you know, in that and in the school system. So that gave you that opportunity to actually do things directly, you know, with NASA. You didn't have, you know, there weren't a lot of other organizations that were coming in and doing stuff. They pretty much did things directly with the students, because they were trying to track the students from the, you know, from the, obviously the schools, the young school age children, and track them all the way through to come into the space programs to be a part, you know, of those types of things. So I stayed with that, and I stayed, you know, highly interested in the sciences. What also I did as far as with the farm, you know, I would be the one doing the soil samples, the soil testing, and testing the blueberry bushes and the blueberries to make sure that they were free from disease or pestilence, and then, you know, measuring out, you know, the different types of formulations we needed to put on them, you know, so that the crop was good. So you were studying and learning, you know, in those areas, and it was forming you. You really weren't, at that time, my mindset was not thinking, what am I going to do with this? That was just the way it was. That's just what you did.
In those years, I'm trying to see, what were you actually targeting that you were going to get out of that?
I wanted to, actually, I had an affinity for numbers. I had an affinity for science, and I loved to write. And so those were really just the three areas that I felt I would go into, that I would go into doing something, you know, with the sciences, with land, with you know, communications and with finance. And that's really where I tracked into. As far as education, you know, I came out as valedictorian. I served on several, you know, I was, you know, class president, class treasurer. That was actually my first position, was class treasurer. And then I moved from there. I was vice president, then I'm president of the class. So, and then I became over the, our Senate council. I became president over that and served with our school board as a student advisor from the school, you know, to our actual school board for the township. So those are, I mean, it basically your tracks are, you know, this is where you're going. You set your mindset as to something that you want to do and where you want to go, and you go for it. And that's exactly what I did then. And when I came out at 18, when I came out of high school at 18, going to college, I pretty much did the same thing. I went to work at a bank, and I worked in $1 million banking division at American National Bank, and moved from Covert, Michigan to Chicago, Illinois, and went right directly into banking. And I'm really today, this is exactly what I'm doing. I've worked in, you know, other industries, other fields. I worked in telecommunications. I was a land trust officer. So I have worked in other areas, but my primary focus, my primary area has always, my love has always been finance.
That's great. That's lovely. And we're going to spend some time in financing just now. And of course, later we are also going to look at some other area relating to area that you are working on, whether in leadership or setting goals and all of that. So you like finance in a particular way. Tell me something about, what do you really like about financing? What is your love for it? You know, there are some people who like art because they like to have it. There are others who like to design it. There are others who just like because there are different combinations in it. So my question is, what is fascinating you about finance?
What fascinates me about finance is really the reason I even you know, wanted to stay in this field, wanted to kind of be married to this field. And that was because it touches a person's lives from the time they're born until the time they die. There's no area or aspect of your life that does not touch it, that finances do not touch. And finances are, it's not, what I love about it is it's not just one thing, it's many things. And it's not just about money. It is also about the mind. It's about the mindset. And it governs, it helps to help you to govern yourself accordingly so that you begin to realize you don't allow finances to use you, you use finance. That's a whole lesson and learning system in and of itself. And so therefore this, it's everything that you are, it's all around you. And then all at the same time, there's financing in air, there's financing in water, in you know, those types of systems. We have to understand that it is beyond money. And that's what I love about it.
All right. Now, for those who do not understand yet the basis of finance, say, why I'm asking the question is that within the diaspora community, the question of finance is something that comes out again and again, you know, and it's very important. And I like also when you were referring to it that it's not only about the question of money, it has to do also with mindset. Now, for some individual who do not have the basic idea, what do you think they should know to begin to understand how finance even works?
Okay. In the initial understanding, if you understand the body, let's take it from a very simplistic standpoint, the body. We breathe in air. And you take in, although you may take in a very, very deep breath of air, your body then regulates how much actually goes in through your throat, goes into your lungs, and then goes and oxygenates your body. So for that is like you're taking in that breath. The same thing is with finances. There's, you know, how you take it in your body, then there's a regulation, how you use it, and then how it's then used throughout your life and throughout all the things you have to do with it. You can have someone who has a few dollars, small finances, and someone who has multiple billions of dollars, and they will live exactly the same. And that is because of this. They're still a human being on this planet. So no matter how much money they have, they still, their aspirations are still the same. You will hear them say the same exact thing. They still want, they want peace in life. They want to be able to raise their children. They want to be able to live in a nice place. They want to have fresh drinking water. They want to have good air to breathe. They want to have rest. And so therefore, it doesn't matter how much they have. What matters is that they exist, and they exist well. That's when we begin to understand we don't live when the term for Christians, for across any religions, it's all said the same. Man does not live by bread alone. You don't. We exist as humans, one together with the other. So we have to take, sometimes what we have to do is we have to stop running and chasing behind how much money I'm going to have, how much money I'm going to get. You have more money than I do. This country has more than I do. And really look at the natural resources, because there are many countries that are very, that are steep, such as the African continent itself. That is the only continent on the face of this earth that is totally and 100% self-sufficient, meaning that continent does not have to import anything, not one thing. Those 54 countries have everything. There are other countries around the world, they barely can have enough water. They barely can sustain themselves with food. They can't reproduce it. They don't have it. So they have to import and export from other countries. That's the only one. So that is by far, that is the richest country on the face of this earth.
You see, you are touching an area that is very interesting and also very important to many people in this, in our demography, which is Africa, and also the demand, artificial demand that have been created for Africans, no, and the African countries. We import food, we import dress, we import textile, we import the raw material to produce food, we import everything, electronics, we import everything. So, which is a complete opposite of the images actually that you were saying just now. So I want you to say something there. I don't know how far you can go, be political or be non-political, but the reality on ground is that this is a continent, like you correctly said, that should have been able to depend on itself. But the picture we have on ground today is a complete opposite of that. Do you think there can be any explanation to that?
Yes. That's called self-sufficiency, believing in yourself. That's when you turn your... when you limit what you tolerate, the mindset of Africa, the continent, has to limit what it tolerates. And by that, what I am saying is this. You have to limit the outside influence telling you what you need. You know what you need. There's not a person there, even from a child all the way up, doesn't know what he or she needs, doesn't know what he or she wants. And when you look around you, it's right there. If you turn around and tell the ones who were colonizing, you know, it's time to get out, and you live on your own, you would begin to actually, you would see your riches and your wealth. It's a shame. I understand exactly what you're saying, and I will go a little bit deeper here in this one subject area. Chocolates. I love chocolate. The world loves chocolate. Okay, I'm not special. And chocolate, when you think of chocolate, what does your mind automatically think of? Swiss chocolate. They have made a brand of that around the world. There is no chocolate tree, plant, anywhere, bush, or any other mechanism to grow it. In Switzerland, none. The climate is too cold. So why is it that when we think of chocolate, when the world thinks of chocolates, we think Swiss. We don't think about Africa. That's where the chocolate comes from. That's it. So therefore, they're taking all of that, taking it back to Switzerland, making it their own, and selling it to the rest of the world. And everybody is buying into that. For what? A mere bag of silver? A few coins? Are you kidding me? Mindset. When you change that mindset, and you say, wait a minute, this is mine. This is on my land. This is the hand. These are my people who are out there and who are gathering that harvest in. These are my people who are down in those mine shafts, pulling out those diamonds, pulling out those rubies, pulling out that ore, pulling out plutonium. Right now, one of the biggest needs that we have is for those lithium ion batteries. We need that lithium so that we can put in the batteries and we can electrify the world. Well, guess where it is? Africa. We don't have any in the United States. They don't have any in Europe. There's none in Canada. There's none in Australia. There's none in China. It's in Africa, natural. So that's an industry right there. Plutonium, uranium, everything you need is right there. That's where that's why that was the original continent. That's why everything on the face of this earth came out of Africa. There was no United States. There was no Europe. There was no Asia. There was no India. In the Pangaea, when you see as the water began to recede, it is the continent of Africa that stands, that comes up. That's where life began. That is the cradle of civilization. Do you really think that, I don't care if you follow God, Allah, Yahweh, call him what you want to. Do you really think that a God is going to create a place and not put everything you need in that place for the people who are going to be there? That's what he did. If we question that, then we're questioning his ability. Are you kidding me?
Africa has everything, and this is evident also. And we don't need to dig too much now to even see that it is in plain sight. You know, it is contradicting in itself that in Africa people should die of hunger in some places, no? Of course, I mean where the people have been reduced to mere objects, no? Because I was born in Africa and I grew up in Africa. I never really see anybody dying of hunger. Of course, that is because there is no war in my place, no? And because there is no war in my place, we didn't really need the government to provide food for us because we have land. My father, we are 9 in number. All of us survive. We eat from our land. We produce agricultural products. That is where the food came from. Of course, if maybe in some other parts of Africa, if there are some resources like what is happening in Congo, that process is not allowed to stay in place. There is tension going on because they want to take what is under the surface of the earth, the resources. And for this, they are creating crises. People, of course, are dying of hunger. So there are a lot of things that we do not understand where in Africa as to why the saying that a lot of people are dying of hunger in Africa. How do we explain this?
What happens? I don't mean to cut you off, but I will say this. Mm-hmm. My people will perish for lack of knowledge. And what that people should understand what that means to them and to their societies and to their communities. When you don't educate yourself and you simply just rely on others to give to you, then simply you just become like a ward of the state, of whatever state of being, whatever state of mind is there, whatever the state of the people who are in power are, you're just relying on that. If you have the land and it's there up under your feet and you can dig a hole and plant a seed, seeds are everywhere and you can plant a seed, you can live. You can live. You don't need someone to wait on the government to give you some food. especially considering what does how many governments actually go out there and farm the land? The people farm the land. The people cultivate. The people bring in the harvest. The people mill it in the mills. They're doing this. The government's not doing it. And then you're going to turn around. You're really going to turn around and stand there and wait in line for them to give you the food that you just worked and put there. Do for self. Do for self. That's what you can begin to do. You have small community in several areas there throughout Africa. I know Ghana, Gambia, several other places that I can think of. Zimbabwe, they are having those small farming communities where the people are coming together and they're well, they've always been growing the food, but now they're exchanging it one with the other and they're thriving and living. When that's the mind, that's why I always say the thing about the mindset, where you have to, your mindset through business, through leadership has to change so that you begin to become self-sufficient.
That is very important.
And especially
Otherwise, the
to do
ubiquity
that.
wouldn't make sense that a continent that have everything, people should be lacking. Anyway, like you said, the mindset is very important that we are going to be seeing and we're going to be able to understand even how to take advantage of the resources that is just right in front of us, under our feet and all around us. No, we need to, when you don't have the right mindset, you will always see problems all around you. But if you understand how the relationship that you have with your nature, then it becomes resources for you. Now, the mindset, how do we develop that? Because we can see now if that is the problem that we have, then it is manifested in everything around us, that people are dying of thirst. They are living near to the water. Tell me about this mindset. How do we develop it?
Developing that mindset is not being afraid. It's taking that, it's that when I talk about my theme that I have for this year, for the next decade, is take your moonshot. And what that means is just go totally and 1,000% against the grain with no fear, whatsoever. Go against the grain. If the area has been where everybody is dependent on the state or dependent on others, stop depending on it. Go off the grid, so to speak. And in Africa, there's no reason why that continent should not be lit up brighter than any other continent. The sun shines on it literally 90% of the time. You've got, and it's so strong. You just collect that in little small solar panels. That you collect that in. That's electricity. That can light up, that can power the house, that can power towns, communities, whole countries. It's just very simplistic things. You're very highly learned people, highly degreed people. I was never more intimidated being in Nigeria because I was with a group of women and everybody in there had 4 or 5 degrees. I was sitting here with my one. Okay, I felt like, okay, I was slacking, But why are you depending on someone else to do for you when you can do for yourself? And don't and stop giving away. Stop giving away your knowledge. You have, yes, it's wonderful to see Africans, out in the rest of the world and helping out, but it is a sin and a shame. When we look at just the, when we count the Black doctors, so to speak, or the African American doctors in the United States, 70% of that count, do you know where they're from? They're from Nigeria. 70% of the Black doctors in the United States of America are from Nigeria. So then, why that 70% don't go back to Nigeria and set up those same practices they have here in the United States?
All right, that is something that we need to explore a bit now, because it has to do also with when we are talking of the infrastructure. Okay, not the infrastructure, because now we are going to have to look at government. But let's leave the government out of it. I don't really know if we can. Do you think that those 70% really do not want to go back to their country and contribute their quota to the people who actually there are their people that need them, sincerely speaking?
Yes, I know. I don't think. I know that they don't. Because what happens is they come here and people get complacent. They get complacent and it's almost like it's like a siren on an ocean that just can the sound, the song, it can just lull you in and it gives you that false sense of what is. And it gives you the sense of, here, you live in the big homes and you get the big accolades and, all these things. And if I go home, I won't get that. Not realizing you go home and you're treated like a king, much more than what you get treated like here. And don't, but you're constantly put barraged into your psyche, into your sphere of influence, into what you see or what you think you see. They make you feel that this is it. This is the end all be all. And they get complacent. You have many people who come here. And then all of a sudden, in their old age, they wake up and they think, oh, I really should have gone back and done something. And now they're trying to go back and do something, or they've aged out. And so they figure, well, I'm just one person. I can't do anything. And that's not true. The influence you have, go back and teach. You can always do that. You can always go back and be a motivator. But the complacency, if you're not careful, that's why I started up in 2019 a class doing business in Africa, teaching people how to do business in Africa, what they had to understand, helping them to do financing, so that they could get their monies together to help them finance businesses going to do business, in Africa, so that people don't get complacent. It's not to say that it's bad, but if there's help that is to be needed, then it's your responsibility and it's your accountability to go back and help.
All right. I wouldn't even debate that at all because that is the line that I share. Only that we need to look at the fact that a doctor or a student who just graduated from a medical school do not really have the resources to set up the infrastructure that is required to treat patients. No? So to say that this 70% of people that we are referring to here as Nigerian doctor do not want to return, or they do not know that people need them at home, I think that would be over simplistic. But the point is that it's really more complicated than it naturally appear, the politics that we have in Africa and how system really work. The infrastructure is not something one person can really build, no? Because most of those doctors there that are working, it's not like they are working in private, working as private there. The infrastructure is there. Of course, I also know because this is something that go both ways, no? That those infrastructure are built by people. In Africa, we also need to build our infrastructure. But by Africa, what do we mean in this sense? Are we talking about the young doctor who just finished school? Is it the person that we are expecting to build it, the road, the electricity? So help me with that because. Like I said, I agree 100% that we, the individual, should really take up the bull by the horn. But to what extent can we really sustain ourselves in this system that is almost anti-people?
Well, what you can do is this. When you, this is called leverage. If you've ever seen, if you wanted to move a boulder that was 10 tons, you would get yourself literally cut down a tree and you would wedge that tree up under that boulder and you would level that against another boulder. And then you would have the push, you'd have the weight of the people or some weight and force against it to lift that boulder. So, what am I speaking about as far as leverage? If you have here doctors, be there, Nigerian won't just pick on them because there are other doctors, but it's just that the Nigerians had the highest number. But if you have someone coming here from Africa and they study here, they get the knowledge, they understand, they go work for someone and some, or maybe they have a private practice or what have you, take your money and put it and bridge it back to those states and those countries in Africa and lift that boulder, because now you're here in the States and you can continue to make that money and let that be a pipeline and lift it up until it is level with where you are here. Do you understand what I'm saying?
If
That's
I
what you do. You leverage what you have. So just as I'm here, right? Here in the United States. And I have teams of people. I have a tablet program through, I'm a Lifesavers International Ambassador, and our headquarters is out of Nigeria. And so in the States, with what we can do, I put together a tablet for every child program. And so what we do is here, because we can get the funding here through here, I got the humanitarian funding through here. So we take that money. Excuse me, we send that back so that it goes back to Africa and it buys tablets so that children can have connectivity. And then we're doing the electrical, and we're putting educational information on there, that sort of thing like that. That's called leverage. That's what you do. Now, am I single-handedly trying to change the governments there and how they operate or how they don't operate? No, I'm getting into the hands of the people what the people need. I'm not trying to go in and change your governments, because that's years and years of thoughts of way of doing things. And a lot of times that's the big dinosaurs in the room. And I say that lightly because yes, I do work with the governments right here. And then, throughout all countries that I love and I have the respect, but I understand those systems, and those systems have been put in place, and it's so hard to move. It's almost like they've crusted over, and like a scab crusts over something. So, but then what happens with that scab? That scab eventually falls off, and so I know. So I'm not concerned with trying to deal with that scab. I'll let that fall off, that because time will take that off. But in the meantime, I'm going to put the necessary blood and the necessary nutrients into that's up under that scab, if you understand my analogy.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Not just that I understand it, I also love it. I like the approach that you're taking, that it is the people that is going to make the change. Also, because the change is going to affect the people directly. I'm only actually more concerned of the how, and of course, you already showed part of it. But now look at some of the what are the excuses on the part of these Nigerians out there, these our brothers and all of us, me included. Because you have a lot of dealings with Nigeria and in Nigeria, and by extension, also many other Africans, what excuses do they give you as to why they are in the West, in the diaspora, instead of maybe in Africa or in Nigeria, be the field workers?
They're here because they have the best way, and this said a lot here in America, they bought the dream. They bought the dream, and they believe it's like you're living in a fantasy. It's like Disneyland. I don't know if you've ever been there, but Disneyland is, it's a magical place. Well, it's a place of fantasy. It's a place where, kids can go, and they got rides, big teacup rides, literally like a teacup, and you're riding around in a teacup. Okay, you're never going to ride around in a teacup. Okay, but it's a ride, it's a fantasy. It has, a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it's not real. And so what they do is they buy the dream, and they believe the fantasy, and they believe that what they have here is their kingdom. There's a movie. I'm just going to digress for a moment, if you would allow me. There's a movie, Coming to America, and with Eddie Murphy. And a lot of people have seen that movie.
I've seen it
And
too,
you've
yes.
seen that. Okay, well, there's a piece. There is one almost like there's one line, one exchange between him and Mr. McDowell. He's working for Mr. McDowell, you know, as doing the cleanup and doing that sort of thing, mopping the floors, right? He's the king. He's the prince at that time. And so when Mr. McDowell asks him to come over to his home and he looks at it, then he's showing them all around and what he wants them to do and stuff. And so he says, well, you know, you keep working hard and one day, you know, you could be in a place like this. You know, you could have this. This is my castle. I'm the king of my castle. And you could have a place that looks like this. And that's what he has, that house there, right? And it's big, it's beautiful. And so what does Eddie Murphy say? The prince. He says, if this was my aspirations, I don't think I'd be. And he didn't really say it out loud to him. He's kind of muttering it up under his breath. The audience could hear it. And Mr. McDowell, he's going away somewhere else. He's not trying to embarrass him. But basically what he's saying is, if this could not be my kingdom, because he's looking at this is just a single house. And then you see later on in the movie where where his kingdom actually is and what all he really has. Okay. And that's the, but what happens is when they come to America, I tell you, Obihai, they get into that house. They get into those cities, into the condominium, or have their fast and fancy cars, and they buy the dream. They think this is it. And they're not realizing, are you, this is not it. All that you have there is way more than what you can have here. We don't even have. You can put this whole country on your continent, what, six times, and we still haven't covered the whole country, the whole continent. I mean, come on. So there's no way. There's never a way. Those numbers, it's like, come on, the numbers don't work. They don't work, no matter which way you try to do it.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. And this is why I also like this conversation that we must talk to ourselves and we have to be very frank about it too. All right. Now, I understand that you are very, as a diaspora, member of the diaspora and also working in the in finance and looking at data. Of course, you cross our data to understand what is happening. You might have somehow heard the news of the African crossing to Europe, no? Several thousands of them die every year to cross to Europe. Do you think that there could be something that is fueling this migration? Why Africans are running away? Of course, I came to Europe from Africa too, though I didn't pass there. I got a visa and I'm here. Of course, I'm part of there. I'm not different from any other African who have migrated from Africa to Europe. And since we are looking at a way that we can stay in our home and live proper lives, do you think that there could be any explanation as to why people are being pulled away from their home?
Well, what happens is this. If you remember the childhood, you asked me about my childhood and what was going on there. There is a, and this came actually, the story came out of Europe. And the childhood story called the Pied Piper. And the Pied Piper in the childhood nursery rhymes, the Pied Piper goes into all these different towns throughout all the different lands. That means throughout all the world, okay? And he has like a flute like, and he plays a song. But the only ones that are attracted to the songs are the children, not the adults. And so he goes throughout the towns, and he plays the songs, and then the children, you know, they hear it. And then he tells them, you know, at a certain time, you know, we're going to all get together and we're going to all leave. And we're going to go and play a game. And what he does is he leads all the children out of each of these towns. And that's how he gets the children. And then the story ends. That's exactly what is happening. You see, when the conquerors come in, conqueror does not say, I'm coming here to conquer you. They say, I'm coming here in the name of peace. We're going to play this song for you. And everybody is going to love the songs. And the children, they don't know, they're in a trance. Read that story. You can get, you can look that story. It's a nursery rhyme, The Pied Piper. And you can see it in any children's book, any library, Google it, you'll see. And that's exactly what has happened. That will answer your questions in whole and 100%. That is what is happening. And that's why people are dying to get to someplace else.
All right. Now, these people are our people. What would be your message to them? Speak to them because you understand what we're talking about.
My message would be, is my message to the global majority. You are the global majority. You have been everywhere. You are the cradle of civilization. You've brought civilization to the world. Now it is time to wake up and really begin to walk into who you are and whose you are. God did not make you to sit at the foot, to be up under, to be trampled on. Do not blindly give up your continent or your rights to your continent or your rights to the riches that you have, the resources that you have. Do not give up those rights for someone to tell you that what you have is not good enough and what they have is better for you. Don't believe it. You cannot put the whole of Africa into any continent or any country on the face of this earth. You know that you are being lied to, that you are being disenfranchised one from the other. Do not allow yourself to be conquered or to be divided by simply the promise of a dollar, the promise of some money, the promise of a better way of life. You have the better way of life. That is why the colonizers, they're not coming as a colonizer with chains and with guns. They're coming in with a happy face, and I'm going to help you, and with money. And you're thinking that that is helping you. But look around. Really look around. Are you able to enjoy? Are you able to use? Or are you being slowly moved out of your own homes? Do not believe what is being told to you. Wake up. The sleeping giant of Africa must wake up.
Thank you so much for that. That message must go home. All right. Now, that is a thought that I was having. It is like this. Is it possible that the African diaspora can play a role in the reawakening of Africa itself? And this is why I'm thinking like this. Because in Africa, the European came and they told us a certain story, both about them and about us. And for some reasons, that story became our reality. Many people in Africa do not know how Europe or Europeans really act, how they function, and how they think, how they live, and how they treat Africa in the real sense of the word. So let's say now, these people, Africans, who are now in the European territory, living among them, be subjected to racism and all form of inhuman treatment. Not all of them, I must specify that. Say they now realize what is happening. Do you think they have any role to play in trying to transmit to Mother Africa that indeed this is the reality between us and the European? Do you think it can be any way reasonable or make any sense? Do you think that the Africans many Africans have walked into Europe and the Western world can make any sense in the reawakening or in the retelling of the African story?
Yes. Oh, you definitely. Definitely. When you have to understand history. History is history. And then your story becomes a mystery. And what you do is this: speak up. Speak up and speak out and do not be afraid. Because to tell your story, to tell the true stories. We have podcasts. We have video, you've got social media, influencers, you have all those ways to put that story out there. You've got filmmakers, you have that. And you're doing that. Begin to tell the true stories. The true stories. And what you have is in many cultures, what you will see is there are many people out there who will be very, very friendly to you telling that, because guess what? Your story that you're telling out of Africa is their same story. Right now, you think Ukrainian people aren't having the same story? They're having the same story. You think Jewish people don't have the same story? They're telling that story again and again and again. They tell that story of the Holocaust and what happens. They play that movie every single year. And they tell that story again, 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 again. They don't stop telling the stories so that they people know, and nobody can tell them, oh, that didn't happen. They tried to do that, here in the United States and tell the people, oh, no, Hitler didn't kill 6 million Jews. What are you talking about? That never happened. And those people, they rose up like a rage of angels. That's what Africa has to do. Rise up like a rage of angels, use these type of platforms and make it your business. Make it your business. Make it a 10-year plan. In 10 years, you know the stories that you want to have told. You know the truths that you want to know. You know the people you want to know. Set a 10-year goal. And that means, okay, myself, my podcast, other people who I know who are podcasting or doing social media or have filmmakers, that we're going to start telling these stories and just flood the market. And what you'll see is pretty soon, that's all the stories there'll be. There won't be anything else because why? We are the global majority, the most on this globe. You look around you. How many different continents with people of color on them? Every continent on the face of this earth. And the majority of those people, when you see people of color, we're everywhere. We've all, because why? This is where we went. This is who we are. Everyone has tried to buy into this. I'm a part of this white culture or that white community, the Caucasian community. No, you're not. That community is very small in Europe, very, very small, that came out of those Caucasus mountains.
All right, so it means that after all, this is a game that is sometimes naturally be arranged itself or somehow artificially be set up. That the fact that a lot of Africans are leaving their continent, of course, not the majority of Africa that are leaving the continent, no, that had to be very clarified. I left Nigeria in 2004. The population of Nigeria was barely 120 million. Today, we are crossing, we have crossed 200 million. So there is no lack of people at home to start with. But the point is that all of us now must be saying the same thing. We must be having a clear objective. We must be telling the story. And I think there is power in this storytelling, in that wherever we are, we must order, because I think. Let me share this story with you. I was in JSS 2. There was a small history lesson. This teacher that was teaching history sort of touched the story of slavery. Then he showed us a picture. And this picture looked like sardine. It was several lines of Africans that were lined up, tied hand and feet. They were being transported to the new world, as they would call it. But I am just a child now. I can't understand. I can't even fathom it. I don't understand it. How is it that a human being can do this to another human being? And I am being told now that these are done by the European. And these are the same people we look upon as people that are better than us. So that is confusing for me. Then I said, if I have the chance, I want to understand these people. How do they reason? So this is one of the reasons, apart from many other reasons, why also I am here. Now, since I'll be here, I'll be doing a lot of study. Just the way that I'm talking to you, this is how I do it. I just want to understand the story, what is going on. So I believe that the Africans that are in the diaspora have a responsibility to tell the story.
Mm-hmm. And that's why, and you're absolutely right with that. And the reason that's why you were brought out, you have to look at that. You can't, it's like if you're in the eye of the storm, in the eye of the tornado, you can't see what's going on the outside. So it's almost a calm, what's going on the inside. And you can't feel for it. But when you get outside of it, then you can see and you can devise a plan as to, how can I dissipate this storm? You know, how can I make this better? And that's the reason, this is the reason why. This is your voice. This is your horn. If you will, whenever something was happening or they wanted to bring the people together, there was the one who had the horn and they would sound the horn and blow so many blasts so that all the people would listen, would come together. And they knew, depending on, what the blasts were, how many they were from the horn and the sound that was blown, that whether this was a danger call or a call to action, or if this was, a call, for happiness, for celebration. So this is your horn. Keep blowing your horn. That's all I can tell you. Keep blowing it, keep telling it, and put together that 10-year plan and align with others so that there's that accord that you're talking about. We are speaking on that one accord. Everybody's, agree. We're going to do one show a month or two shows a month, and these are going to focus on these topics that are going to actually make the change. We're going to be the ones, we're going to be the pebble droppers is what I call it. That's what I see myself as. I drop that pebble on the ocean that becomes a tsunami on distant shores.
Yeah, that is it. I believe that. All right, now talking of 10 years plan, you and I have, you have told me about your 10 years goal. Let's explore that a little bit. What are you thinking in the next 10 years? Educate us about that.
Okay. In the next 10 years, what I want to be able to have is I set up for this one church organization here. They had 146 church plantings throughout the African continent.
So did they get a church?
Churches. Yeah, they're building churches. The people in Africa are building the churches, bricks, making the bricks and building the brick churches. And then what the funding that they were looking for me was for the to put the roofs and the foundations, the concrete foundation, and then the roof on the top of the building. And that for us, that was not a lot because it's really each building was only about $1,500. So that was really not a lot of US dollars for money for us to raise and to help them do that. But what I want to do within the next 10 years is everywhere that they have those churches planted, I want to build a STEM tech center, science, technology, engineering, mathematical center, and space, STEM and space centers. And that way that the people that are in those villages, those cities where their churches are, and they're in about 30 different, across 30 different countries there, their children will be able to study that information firsthand. They won't have to, have someone bringing it to them. It'll be their knowledge. Teach them. I'm a proponent. I'm a master trainer. And what I do is I train others to train. so that, you know, I'm not trying to bring you my information and feed that to you. I want you to learn it so that you can then turn around and teach it. I won't, you know, I want 120 years, but I don't expect to be here forever. So you need to pass that knowledge on and, you know, let these young folks get up and do something. So I want to have that. So that's 146 space centers. And in each of those areas where we have that, we're also going to be, I have a modular building company here in the United States. And so I want to take that and be able to build that, build those in Africa. And then that way the people again give them the knowledge so that they can build their homes, because you build a home inside of the factory, build the factories, build a home. When you produce something, that's when it's yours. It's not mine. It's not somebody else's. It's your stamp, it's your name, it's your quality that's looking at it. And now you can build the homes for yourself, for the people, and really begin to, you know, uplift the people in a grand way. And those are the three major areas. And I'll, obviously with that comes, you know, the solar, the electricity, and the internet.
All right. Now I have a curiosity. What has all this plan, technology, training, studies had to do with church? Help me clarify that.
No, the church was where we already did that for the church. They had 146 churches they wanted to put in. It's not the church. It's not to do with the church. It's just that's where they already had. This is with the Christian Methodist Episcopalian Church. They already had gone in and made the agreements where they were putting their churches. They had already been in those communities, so they were building new. Most of them, they were building new churches. They had old churches, and they were trying to refresh them and build new churches. So what I made an agreement with them was that I wanted to come back and also to be able to build for the people there these other things. So I just
Okay.
kind of leverage again. That's where I leverage. They've already, you know, have the relationships. They have the relationships. They were granted, you know, land to build on. And I said, okay, this is what you need to build as far as to help them to be educated. This is what you need to build to make them self-sustaining. So that's what I'm bringing.
All right, that's fine. That's fantastic. I would like to explore more on those area of the technology because those are very important. Only I'm yet finding it difficult to understand the connection that it really has with the church, other than using it as a link to get to Africa. Because
That's all it was. That's all it is.
Nigeria actually is over evaporating with churches. Every corner you go is church. People pray all across the corner because Nigeria appear to me that we are living in a trance in terms of this miracle thing, churches everywhere. So, and of course, most of these voices are also coming from the United States. They sponsor most of this project, no? So, my curiosity is, why are we not spending those money on some of those that you are making mention of just now, like solar, like helping to build small infrastructure, small training program where people can learn to take care of themselves? Because the churches we have in Nigeria, they are not helping people to liberate themselves. They are just like the way the European came with the church, using it to entangle the people and take it away from themselves, where they continue to abuse themselves. I don't see that to be different from even this wave of
But here, I
what is it,
want
the
you to
church?
those church that business. That was my client, okay? And we helped them to fund them to build or to rebuild where they already had existing churches, or they already had an existing group who were going to church, and they really just redid their infrastructure, okay? It's not for them to bring a new church there. And all we are doing is using that relationship to and leveraging that relationship to bring them innovative. That's what STEM does. STEM is science, technology, engineering, mathematics. Bring that there so those people can be trained. That's why I said I'm a master trainer. So what we do is we will train and teach them the innovations, and then new innovations, they will need to develop that on their own. So you leave them with that. So now they've studied, and then the space program, they begin to study in those areas that they normally don't study in, because you're going to need a lot of people who are going to have to be a part of the space program as we begin to do those types of things. That's self-sufficiency, that's self-sustaining, that's ongoing forever. That's your next, that's seeding your next generations. And then as far as bringing in the manufacturing and development, they've got to be trained. We're building manufacturing plant. Those got to be built. That's money there. When you build it there, the money stays there. That's teaching the people how you keep the money in your community by building it in your community, not you coming here to America or you going there to Europe or you going to Australia or someplace else and building infrastructure for them. No, you build infrastructure for yourself, and then you need houses. Okay, build your houses for yourself. You can do it. You've got that. You got the manufacturing plant. You got the education. You have the material. What's the excuse?
That is clear. That is clear now. You clarified it before. Of course, I just wanted to let you know why I was asking you the question. I wanted it to be clear, but it's clear now. Okay. Because, you know, I repeat again, because there are too many things that is happening within the area of churches in Nigeria. We have been complaining about it. It's time we start concentrating on the people instead of this, the brainwashing that they have done. Okay, I just wanted that one to be clear. All right. Now, tell me more about this STEM project in Nigeria, this infrastructure thing, and also the space project particularly. How do you intend to engage maybe people that are not, say, because you did make mention of the church, so we are looking at maybe a community. So maybe people that are not part of that community, how do you intend to engage with them?
Through the children. Through the children. It's education. Because basically you're bringing in, when you're bringing in the solar, obviously, you know, solar power, you know, you're bringing that in, the internet, you know, all those things. You need people to be trained. You've got to teach them, you know, how to install that, you know, how to put that together. So that's science, that's technology, it's engineering, it's math. And so you're teaching the children. So basically that's what those are. Those are centers to teach them, you know, how to utilize these technologies, how to develop new technologies, you know, with this. Most certainly it's not going to stay stagnant. So it's education. And then with the space program, we also have a component of that of manufacturing, because we're building space stations. And so in order to build space stations, you need a lot of people to do those things. So this, again, that if you're building it there, they're making the money. They're working there. They're the engineers. So you got to teach them and train them. So you see what I'm saying? It's never a point where they're not teaching, they're not learning, and they're not keep. And then that helps also the way you kind of fold that into a community, and you get the, say, the older people, the parents, the grandparents, what have you, the community leaders to buy into that, is the fact that this is going to stay here and your children will stay here. Because why? There's places for them to work. There's, you know, the contracts are already there. This work needs to be done. We're doing it here instead of me, you know, putting it in, say, putting another one in the United States. Not, you know, because it's, you know, we get one more, the United States gonna fall in on itself. We have that. We need, now you put them there where you have the land space, you have the land mass to be able to do that, and put those people to work. And now they can work, and they got houses. They have a life. Now they begin to build for self. We have several companies that are several independent companies that are building like the Von Braun Space Center. I'm a part of that orbital assembly. And so with building that space station, it's a componentry, and that componentry really is built like on a truss, you know, so it's built, you know, it's just machine technology that you build it. You know, that you have to be able to build them, but it takes, you know, it takes a lot in order to build it and to keep it going and to keep it up. And then you want to have more than just one. So that's just a continuation. So that is not, that's something that industry is in its infancy, and this allows it to grow. So it allows the continent to grow with that industry. And as we begin to actually stretch out into space, there are, excuse me, there's the greater need. You know, like I told you that I was a part of other projects. If we began to put things on Mars and and have those colonies there, you've got to build habitats, and you have to build big turbine engines, and you have to have food management and food storage. And so that, food production, it's got to be able to produce because you have to live. There's nothing there. So everything you have has to be produced and has to be built in such a manner that it can become self-sufficient or self-sustaining.
And what would be the finality of this project? Are people okay? I'm referring to the Mars project now, not necessarily the one related to Africa. So that at the point people can go to live there, to transfer there, to vacation there, or yeah, or a combination of both.
Oh, for the for, yeah, for all of that, for all of that, so that to study, to live, and also so that we, exploration, exploration. Man was not meant, you didn't have you, this would be a pretty wasted galaxy, having all these planets out here, and we're just gonna overcrowd this one. Because what happens is this. The tensions will only rise. The more and more, as the population grows, the tensions will continue to rise. So, because we are living longer, the tensions are only going to get worse. So, we do have to look for other measures, and we have to look at it with eyes open, head up, eyes open, and looking forward. You're not going to be able to, the Earth, we're getting to the point of capacity. And so now it's either we have to look at other ways, other areas that we can actually offload the people onto so that we don't overcapacitate the earth itself.
Oh, that's interesting. That's really important. You see, like the thing that we are reading about Elon Musk's project in space. So one day we can actually vacate, do a kind of a vacation there to, or maybe a project to meet some other people who already occupy some other part of the universe. It sounds very interesting, of course, futuristic, no? Because these are things that will only happen in the future. But before then, we need to prepare ourselves to. For some of this encounter, and I want to believe because nobody really know what is happening there. Or do we have any specified information as to who we might encounter going out of this earth, going out of this space where we are?
We have an idea that we know what. Okay, the first thing we had to get past the fact was the arrogance that we were alone, that we were all there is. So once we got past that fact, people started, countries began to put more money into the space program, which is what we've done. What we're going to encounter is pretty much, we will encounter people who are like us. We will encounter other life forms that are very similar to us. We will encounter life forms that are very different from us. And one of the things that we have to realize as we go around, that's why we have to get to a point where we won't get to a point here. We'll get to those points and places, as we move out into the galaxy, where we begin to appreciate what we have. And appreciate the human form that we are actually in, and also other forms, that the animals will really truly begin to appreciate, the animals and all the different various animals that you have. Because if you look around in the animal community, look how different all these different animals are. They are not all the same. We basically are somewhat the same. But they are extremely different. You go from one, right in a jungle. You look at an elephant, look at a tiger, totally different. But if you look at about the only differences between us, maybe some features, the color of our skin, but basically we're all the same. So that tells you right there that this universe is going to have, very, very different species.
But we have seen some of these images of UFO. What is some people say they have seen something, some others are just merely speculating. or things like that. But we don't really know what to believe. Of course, it is by common sense. One should imagine that this earth where we live should not be the only place where we can find, anyway, would that to call it human being or living things like us? Because it is impossible to calculate the entire universe and just come out with, okay, Earth is the only place you have where life can be. But even
Exactly.
that, we are not even sure. So that is why we need expert to explain some of these things to us. Because we need to think, we need to understand that maybe we are not all alone in this universe. But even the evidence to back that up, we don't have it sometimes, no?
Well, yeah, yes, we do. Again, much of your evidence, much of what you have is right in plain sight. It's right there in plain sight. We have the evidence. We have simply, again, allowed ourselves to be told it's not there. You can look at artifacts, go right into museums, go right into, you go right there to Egypt, you go throughout Africa, you see all the different things. You see the pyramids. The pyramids are the one thing that they're on every single continent. Why? The obelisk, every single continent. Why? Why would somebody do that? What were they doing? We see electricity, where the electrification is simply with lightning rods, not even connected with wires. And that can be across the world. Why? You see what I'm saying? So it's therefore, and you look back and you look at these different things, and we see much evidence, not just what somebody may have seen, a glimpse of, what have you. You see the drawings, you see the artifacts, you see all these things that show you ships, people in ships. Probably, we may even one day really tell the truth that we may have come here from someplace else.
That sounds very
We
interesting now.
always talk about the aliens came here, the aliens helped us with the technology. Yeah, we may have been the people, our ancestors, ancestors, ancestors may have been the people who were coming here from someplace else and came to this planet.
So, by ancestors, now you are referring to a human being only, or you are referring to
Ancestors,
life in general?
life in general, the ancestors of the people, the ancestors of the people who actually populated this earth could have very easily have come from someplace else. Because there's not a race on the face of this earth who does not have a story that does not speak about ships, about them being brought to this place where, just all those. And those stories, and when see, that's where the beauty of the stories began. When those stories begin to connect the dots, and you're like, wait a minute, how is it these people over here experience the same people, same thing? These people over here, you saw what they saw. Let's wait. Everybody's telling a story, obviously, from their perspective, because you're on different parts of the world, but everybody saw the same thing at the same time.
That's interesting. Anyway, that is something that we can explore another
We can
day,
explore that
detail.
later, but this has been wonderful. It truly has. And I think we've got a lot we can come back to and have another conversation on. And I appreciate your having me, and I'm definitely looking forward to coming back.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you. Take
All
care.
right. Talk to you soon. Bye.
If you enjoy this podcast, make sure you subscribe so you never miss any of our future episodes. Rate and review Obehe Podcast and share with your friends who might need it. I remain Obehe Ewafo. Thank you so much for listening, and talk to you in the next episode.